Up North News with Pat Kreitlow is a product of Courier Newsroom and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
Morning. It's Tuesday, August 16th. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow. We've been talking about how it's primary election day in Wyoming and Alaska. In Wyoming, Liz Cheney is quite likely going to lose the chance to keep her seat in Congress, though. I don't know. Maybe she can run as a write-in in the general. I'm not sure of the rules there. Meanwhile, in Alaska, we talked about how Sarah Palin is running in a special election for an open House seat. And I just wanted to bring that back because I just found a quote from her talking about how Alaska is now using what's been called a jungle primary, where there's no parties. You know, it's the top two candidates move on to the general election, no matter what party they're from. And in November, they're also going to use ranked choice voting. Which is a very interesting system that makes sure that whoever wins the election has support from the majority of voters, even if they weren't necessarily their first choice. And while that's a lot to take in and a lot to learn, leave it to Sarah Palin to describe it in a recent interview as, quote, that newfangled weirdo voting system we have where it's mail-in only ballots. Well, the special election is a traditional election with in-person voting, and voters are able to request absentee ballots. But, you know, apparently that's newfangled and weirdo enough for Sarah Palin. And I just don't know if Alaska or the country can handle, you know, going back to this era. But we may go back to the Trump era, you know, in 2024. Who knows?
I would say go back to the Sarah Palin era. I feel like she kicked this whole thing off, Pat. It was kind of a precursor of what was to come, so it almost makes sense for her to, you know, get back into the national stage of politics.
One of my favorite TV news hosts to watch is on MSNBC, Nicole Wallace. And part of the reason I enjoy her so much isn't just that she, you know, is, you know, a never Trumper Republican who has been, you know, speaking truth to power and whatnot, but she is basically paying her penance in being part of the McCain campaign that brought Sarah Palin on board. Of course, she has talked at length about the frustrations of, you know, coming to terms with who Sarah Palin is and what a disaster she was. But I have more respect for her in part because I remember when Nicole Wallace was Nicole Devenish as a young, you know, single woman who was working for the campaign of George W. Bush back in 2000 when he was running. And Nicole had to do the local TV interviews as the campaign spokesperson. And so working for Channel 13 at the time, we would interview her by satellite and she would speak on behalf of the Bush campaign. I didn't agree with anything that she said, but I just remember thinking she was brilliant. She clearly, you know, had the tools to, you know, describe George W. Bush in the most glowing terms. And, you know, ultimately Bush prevailed over Gore in 2000. And then I didn't hear anything of her again until, as Nicole Wallace, she was working, you know, for the McCain campaign and reacting to the disaster that was Sarah Palin back in the day. And now she's basically appointment viewing for a lot of folks on afternoon cable. Before we talk about the legislative races with Bob Look, who's a candidate for state Senate, I did want to just very quickly address a headline that some people have gotten very excited about. I'm not, and I don't think people should read too much into it. And it deals with the Ron Johnson U.S. Senate race against Mandela Barnes. The Republican Senate Campaign Committee has announced a huge cutback in its TV ad spending in three critical states, including Wisconsin, you know, along with Pennsylvania and Arizona. And we're talking about cutting about $2 million worth of TV ads in Madison and Green Bay alone. ads that might have been, you know, pro Ron Johnson. They may have been anti Mandela Barnes. You know, we don't really know. These decisions, along with Pennsylvania and Arizona, let's see, they're cutting more than $5 million in Pennsylvania, another $2 million in Arizona. And, you know, apparently this says more about current fundraising directly to the National Republican Senatorial Committee than anything else. And yeah, raising money is never easy. But I'd urge caution on a couple of fronts before people get too, you know, either giddy or panicky on the Republican side about it. First off, we did see this 6 years ago when the National Republican Party kind of wrote off Ron Johnson. You know, he was not looking good in his race, his rematch against Russ Feingold. And so there were cutbacks in spending then. But I mean, we all know what happened from there. Donald Trump, you know, shocked the world, and Ron Johnson came along for the ride after promising not to run for a third term. And, you know, here we are. So he has seen commercial cutbacks before. The other thing, though, that's important to note is the National Republican Senatorial Committee is one of a, you know, seemingly a galaxy of groups that are out there. So donors are not dumping their money there. But that's not to say they're not dumping their money elsewhere in all of the various super PACs that, you know, don't have to report their donors. And I don't think we're going to see any downturn in Ron Johnson ads or attacks on Nelson Mandela. So I just Mandela Barnes. So I just wanted to get ahead of, you know, that sense. We're still going to see plenty of ads. We're not seeing any cutback coming. Bob Look, candidate for Senate, the state Senate, District 29 next. You're up north.
5, 4, 3, 2 98.9 FM and WXCO 1230 AM, Cronenwetter's choice for news, talk, and sports radio. Streaming 24/7 at BoldFallsRadio.com.
I had to bring in Jimmy Buffett's Boat Drinks because there are not that many songs about hockey. And, you know, so you've got to go with that one, even if everybody at the hockey game is dreaming of a place where it's warm. Hockey games might be where you have heard of our next guest more often than politics, but he would like that to change as he seeks a seat in the Wisconsin State Senate. Bob Look joins us here. Bob, good to have you here. Thanks for the visit.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it a whole lot.
For those folks that might be hearing your voice here, and now we're seeing you as well, your voice is familiar for hockey games. How?
Well, I've been the public address announcer for Wisconsin Badger men's hockey since they opened the Kohl Center in 1998. And so this coming fall will be my 25th season.
Not a bad gig. And I mean, that's, I don't know that I can think of a better role to have for a winter job. So, you know, good
well,
on you.
I was a one game sub. The person who was supposed to do the games couldn't make the very first game. And they knew I was back in the state, and I had worked for the Milwaukee Admirals hockey team in Milwaukee and Peoria Rivermen when I worked out in Peoria, Illinois. So I just made a cold call and they says, could you help us out in the first game? I did the first game and the coach says, you're my man. And I've been there ever since.
Well, I think it's a great thing. And now you've are turning your attention toward something more political. I will say first, we're going to make sure we tell people how to find Bob Look online, because right now you know Bob, if you Google Bob Look, you end up with a bunch of haircuts, you know, that right. Have a Bob hairstyle to them. So you're really suffering from the disease of the common name here.
Yeah, well, we do have a website for the campaigns, BobLookForStateSenate.com. It's a website that you can interact. You can reach me via email. You can make donations, and what I will promise be doing on this website, on basically almost an every other day occurrence, I will post a video of either a comment or something in regards to the campaign, maybe an issue that may come up so that people know exactly, you know, where I'm coming from, so they won't have to, well, gee, I wonder what Bob thinks about this issue. So that's one way to reach people a little quicker than going door to door or going around this district. As you well know, the districts are really amusing within the state of Wisconsin, and the Senate District 29 is no exception. Not unusual with, as far as the people. I mean, the people have no, you know, they just happen to be put in those districts, but most of Marathon County is part of the district, but we also include Taylor County, Rusk County, and Sawyer County, and a little bit of Wood County. But again, it's gerrymandered to be where if I drive from one end to the district to the other, it takes about 3 hours. So that's it's quite a run for a state Senate district.
Oh gosh, is it ever? I mean, it really just kind of has the appearance of an appendix on the map. I mean, almost you know, an afterthought. And that it's not all fair to the people in and around that district that our districts aren't more contiguous, or they aren't more uniform, that aren't more compact. But regardless, because of the 2011 Republican gerrymander, was reinforced this year by the right-wing justices of the state Supreme Court. This is the district that Bob described that he's running in. And it's a district that Jerry Petruski had represented for a number of years and is now retiring. So, Bob, with an open seat, what is the case that you're making to voters as they decide who should be their new state senator?
Well, first of all, you know, talking about Senator Petruski, he's a friend of mine because we both got together when he first became an elected official. I was working for WSAU radio at the time, and I was covering the Republican quote-unquote victory party in 1998, which was not many victories, except for the assembly race where Jerry Petruski just squeaked in there. It wasn't until like about 11:30 at night that we finally got the final numbers that we could actually say that Jerry had been elected. So it was Jerry, myself, and a bartender at the Elks Lodge in Wausau, Wisconsin. And I was doing his first interview as the assemblyman elect. So I've known Jerry since that time and remained very good friends with him. I wasn't running because Jerry had retired. In fact, I had no interest in running for the state Senate until I received a call one Thursday evening from a member of the Democratic Party who I had met previously, and brought up the point that there's no one running for the state Senate on the Democratic ticket this coming year. And I says, well, I'm sorry to hear that. He says, would you consider doing it? Well, you know, I've been retired, got out of the broadcast business in August of 2017. And I was liking the retirement life. However, I'm from the position that it's better to have a race when there's two horses, at least, in it. And I figured with talking to the Democratic Party that they would give me the assistance to get me on the ballot. They did. And so off we're running.
And in doing so, something we've discussed before, and I really can't emphasize it enough, is the value that brings toward critical races at the top of the ticket. Because whether it's Mandela Barnes, you know, Ron Johnson, Tim Michaels, or Tony Evers, you know, if they win by one vote, it doesn't matter if that one vote was in, you know, the biggest city in Milwaukee or the smallest township in the 29th Senate district. If somebody's coming in and they wouldn't have come in if you know, you hadn't talked to them and persuaded them to vote, those are victories at the top of the ticket that just don't happen. So, you know, I'm sure that was explained to you and probably did not need much persuading on that front.
What was more important to me, Pat, is that I would like to be that conduit for the people of this district, of the 29th Senate district, to Madison. And the only way to do that is to go out and meet people and say hi, you know, and find out what, you know, what's important to them. And what's really what I find interesting with talking to many, many people, you know, as I've had the chance to visit throughout the district, is the fact that we have so much in common. We have so much, you know, that we want to get done and to do right by each other. I want to bring to Madison something that maybe is a little bit odd, and that's people who don't yell at one another. I'd like to emphasize my background in communication, which is what I did for a living. My job was to make radio stations successful, get the most amount of listeners so that we get the biggest bang for the buck for the advertisers. That's the basic, you know, ingredient of commercial radio. And you don't become a popular radio station by not serving the community or serving the people that you are licensed to serve. So I kind of bring that background of 40 plus years of broadcasting into this race, and also the communication skills that go with it.
We talked to Dick Ausman in our last hour, and he's hit on some similar themes that his own background in, you know, communication skills, bringing people in a workforce together, you know, listening more often. There seems to be a common theme here, Bob, that politics could use that, not just in Washington, D.C., but in Madison as well.
A person learns a lot more by listening. Unfortunately, that's been a lost art. We have to listen to one another. I remember going out, getting the signatures to be on the ballot, and there was a gentleman at a location, had the red MAGA hat on, and I just asked him. I said, "Would you like to sign my papers to get on the ballot for the state senator?" And he says, "Oh, sure." And he looked at it, and all of a sudden, he saw the word Democrat on the party. And he goes, "Oh no, I don't. I said, "Leroy," his name is Leroy. I said, "Leroy, you know, I'm just trying to get on the ballot. It doesn't mean you have to vote for me. I'm just trying to get on the ballot." And then I asked him, "Your grandfather, aren't you?" I said, "Oh yes, I have. How many grandkids do you have?" And we started a conversation. We talked for 15 minutes about everything other than politics. Talked about what they wanted for their grandkids, what they were looking for, you know, as far as, you know, fairness and all this other stuff. And then I says, "Leroy, we've been talking for a quarter of an hour and we haven't had a disagreement yet." I says, "All I'm asking for you is to sign so I can get on the ballot so we can keep democracy going." And he says, "Here, give me that." He wrote it out. And I mean, how hard was that? I mean, he may not vote for me, but the point is we talked to each other.
And wouldn't it be something if we could get that, if you could get 15 minutes, you know, with every voter? And I remember saying, I mean, Dana Walks, when he was running for governor, I was like, boy, if he could get 15 minutes with everybody, you know, he'd be, you know, senator or something by now, because that kind of quality is what we need. Apart from the characters and the values that we need in the legislature, are there particular issues that you're emphasizing in your campaign?
Well, there's several that come to mind. The one issue that really stood out and why I got more fired up about running for the state Senate were these gavel in and gavel outs that were happening in the state legislature when important things were to be discussed, just brought out for a discussion between the various, you know, state legislatures, whether it be in the Assembly or the Senate. And it was all, you know, they gaveled in session and then right immediately gaveled out. They didn't want to deal with the discussion on tough issues. If we can't talk about tough issues to try to find a remedy and to find a solution, we got a big problem here, my friends. We got to confront problems. We can't ignore them. We can't throw them in the back and say, "Well, we'll let somebody else worry about them." No, the problems are here now. They have to be taken care of. That's what a legislature is supposed to do. That's what a representative of the people is supposed to do, represent them and their opinions and their thoughts. That's what I try to bring to the table.
And for the specifically for the 29th district, any particular either issues, projects, priorities that you think people want to see for somebody who's not necessarily bringing home the bacon, but at least not forgetting, you know, the district that he represents? What would people find in you?
Well, again, healthcare is a main issue that a lot of people are concerned themselves with. And the fact that, you know, the common sense gun laws is something that I think needs to be addressed and discussed seriously. Don't just throw it out because some specialized group does not want to even bring it up. Unfortunately, it hits home on my end of the spectrum. quite a bit. And there's common sense things that are out there that could be implemented now that could at least help eliminate some of the, it's not going to take care of all of it, but we got to start somewhere. We got to be smart about it.
Sure do. Bob, look, candidate for state Senate in the 29th district. It was a pleasure getting to tell folks about your candidacy and hope we'll get to talk with a campaign update as we move things along here. Bob, thank you so much.
Pat, I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Good luck. And by the way, the first time I was on WXCO, I started a morning show and my first guest was the mayor of Wausau.
See? So I'm off to a good start here. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Bob, very much. This is Up North News. We'll be right back.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
I had to click through this to see if John Nichols was pulling my leg or not, Luke, but... You're right. I mean, we've been talking so much about the Democratic Senate primary that Mandela Barnes obviously won that we've kind of lost sight of the fact that, yeah, Ron Johnson, of course, won the Republican primary and he got 84% of the vote. But that also means 16% of people who voted in the Republican primary chose David Schroeder. That's 110,000 Republican primary voters who said they didn't want to vote for Ron Johnson.
Dan Schaefer and I talked about it last Wednesday. I saw it. So it was an interesting dynamic, but I don't necessarily know how to explain it, which I feel like is why it's not being talked as much. Because I don't know if that's Republican voters that were dismayed and still consider themselves Republicans, say suburban individuals around the Milwaukee area that just don't like the nonsense that Rojo was spouting, or was it like, was Ron Johnson not far enough because he didn't successfully deliver the fraudulent ballots? And so, like, Trump Republican voters were upset with him for not doing that. I don't really know. It could have also been Democratic voters that were voting in the Republican primary to choose Tim Michaels or Rebecca Clayfish, whoever they thought was the better candidate to go up against Evers this November, and then just still couldn't stomach voting for Ron Johnson on a ballot, so picked his primary opponent. I don't know. It's a really interesting dynamic, though, and John Nichols' piece over the Cap Times dives a little bit more into it.
Yeah, he says Schroeder noted that he's been sharply critical of Johnson, noting that Ron Johnson was banned from Facebook for spreading harmful misinformation about COVID-19 treatments. Of course, there was that near miss on delivering fraudulent electors to the vice president on January 6th. And, you know, continuing to attempt to overturn or at least cast doubts on a free and fair election. Schroeder said of Johnson, quote, "I have become increasingly embarrassed and disgusted with how I have been misrepresented in Washington by the incumbent. I am running to replace him because he does not represent the economic, political, or societal interests of the majority of his constituents." And that's how he ended up with more than with 110,000 votes. Almost as three times as many votes as State Representative Tim Ranthan, who was running for the Republican gubernatorial primary. And Tim Ranthan has been talked about for months and months. And yet, you know, Schroeder got three times as many votes as he did over in the other race. So, I mean, there is that element there. And it, like, you know, when Dan Schaefer was talking to us, he talked about the generational change that Mandela Barnes represents as well. But, you know, there is just a level of, much like with Scott Walker after two terms, our Republican voters, or at least lean Republican voters, are they now saying, you know, that was enough of that, time to move on? Not unlike what Laura Ingraham was saying on a recent show about Donald Trump, saying that she considers Donald Trump a friend, but maybe it's time to find somebody who is Trumpy, but isn't Trump himself. So, I mean, you see the exhaustion, frankly, that some voters are having and are ready to do something different. I've got to do something different at home here, Luke, and I think it's time for advice from you're a relatively new homeowner yourself, right?
Yep. Yep, last couple months here, so it's been an interesting endeavor so far.
Tell you what, instead of asking your advice, I mean, would you be willing to come and repair a toilet?
Well, because
as we established yesterday, a handyman I am not. I mean, when a couple of friends came over, as you know, I was about to take down a big tree branch, they just, you know, charged right in and said, "Hey, let us do that. Why don't you just, you know, take pictures?" So I really wish I could get those friends from out of town back right now, once it became clear that one of the little hoses has become undone from one of the little sprocket thingies inside the tank. And that's exactly how I'm going to describe it at my hardware store later today. And I'm sure that the poor person behind the counter is going to, you know, tilt their head like a cocker spaniel, you know, wondering if there's anything that I said there that would help him or her help me fix this toilet.
Yeah, but they know some of those words that you just described, but not necessarily what the problem is just because you can describe those words. I am not a plumber, so I don't know if I can help out there. I also have, we're redoing one of the bathrooms, and the toilet has been just kind of, the floor has been done now, and we're priming and painting the walls currently, and I am dreading putting the toilet back because I am very worried about doing something wrong. So we'll see what happens.
Oh, you should be.
On that one.
It's just anything where there's if either a water hose or electricity is connected to something, I tend to want to defer to the experts. You know, my wife agrees with me. She's an OBGYN, and as she loves to say, I don't ask people to do their own C-sections. So, you know, maybe there's just some things you shouldn't do yourself. I will let you know how this goes, but it probably won't be tomorrow, because I'm probably going to try to put this off as long as humanly possible. You may eventually show up here and find a post-it note on the door that just says out of order, but at some point I guess I will have to get around to it.
Hopefully before the water fills up in the bathroom. And as long as you can avoid the water level just rising there, then you should be fine.
No, it's just when the little hose, you know, that refills the toilet tank, you know, comes disconnected. And so it still sprays into the tank, but some of it sprays out of the tank. Not a lot, but just enough to be a nuisance. And, you know,
so you got like, some time
again,
to delay.
One of those things where it's going to take me hours to fix what somebody else could come in and do in 5 minutes, but charge me a lot of money for. And that really is, you know, how much is your time worth today, Mr. Kreitlow? Also, by the way, how much is your reputation worth? How much is your sense of manhood worth to get this done? And will helping out your sense of manhood actually cost you even more money in the long run when you screw this up?
See, I'm not tying. I'm trying to do my best as I can as I approach all of these home improvement projects around the house now, to not tie manhood into it at all. I'm very much fine with knowing my limits, and my fiance, she likes to do a lot more. It's very much, she's kind of the wrecking ball, and she likes to go and do the demo kind of things, and then I'm more of the, I like to clean things up, make sure everything looks nice and tidy when it's done, and I'm the cleanup crew. And so I know my respective role. I know how I play into all of the projects, and I'm very, very fine with that. And I agree. The things that you know that you could be putzing around for hours trying to fix, and somebody else could come in and fix it in 5 minutes, is just very, very disheartening. But sometimes you just make an afternoon out of it. So
yeah, there is, well, yeah, because I need to give up an afternoon for a toilet. There is a role that I have had to give up at the house, and I guess I'm okay with it. But I, you know, I, at first it was grudgingly that my wife is now the one that hops on the little John Deere tractor and mows the lawn. But I've come to appreciate that A, she finds it relaxing, you know, that for that 45 minutes or whatever, nobody's bugging you, nobody's asking anything of you, and you've got something tangible to show for it afterwards. And meanwhile, since I do, you know, a lion's share of the, you know, the kitchen work in here, you know, making breakfast every morning, making dinners and things like that, you know, and that's something she does not like to do, does not bring her relaxation. You know, so it always feels a little odd sometimes that I know the neighbors are driving past and going, well, you know, there's Kreitlow. He's a shut in his house again, just trapped inside his home office, won't even mow his lawn. But I also understand the mental health benefits it can bring sitting on that tractor.
Yeah, no, the tractor is definitely, I have a push mower, not a rider. So I don't have the need for a rider mower, but I always appreciate, my mom would like the fact that I was totally fine going and spending the 45 minutes to an hour mowing the lawn as a kid, because I just put headphones in and just went out and did it. But when my dad did it, he would kind of milk it a little bit. So the 45 minute cut was actually about a 2.5 hour cut.
Oh,
and,
wow.
and he would go nice and slow to make sure he didn't miss a single blade of grass. So I definitely do find that solace in pushing the lawnmower. What you got to do is when you're doing all the cooking and maybe some baking potentially, you got to put the pie out on the window so that the neighbors see that you're not just a shut-in, that you're making some baked goods as well.
Put
or some
pie on the window. Is this 1955? What?
Well, you got to give the neighbors some way to know that you're in there baking. Come on. It's got to cool.
They do not envision me baking or doing anything other than yodeling and clickety-clackety on a keyboard. That's all this guy does is talk and write about politics and other stuff. So, yeah, I suppose I could try to change the way the neighbors look at me, but I don't think it's necessarily going to change. I am quite like the kid who stays indoors all day doing violin lessons while everybody else is outside playing, except that I actually like my violin lessons and what I'm doing here. But look at this. What a shut-in I'm every morning from 8 to 11. Now I have to close the curtains, you know, in order to have decent lighting in here for the Zoom. So I'm not seeing the beautiful lake outside, but I'm also not seeing the lawn that needs mowing, and I'm not seeing the tree limb that still does have to be cut up into firewood size chunks. And I'm not in that other room where I have to, you know, monkey around with the toilet. So I might just stay here. If this room had a door, you know, I would just shut myself in and talk to the rest of you all day long. My only friends, all three of you, you know, online, and Luke only because he's getting paid to do it. Brewers managed to not just lose, but really kind of stink things up, losing 4-0 to the Dodgers. Brewers had no base runners, no hits, no walks after the fourth inning. They went through innings 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, just going down from, you know, strikeout to strikeout. And they can't get it going, Luke. They are stuck in second gear or something here.
Yeah, last night was pretty upsetting. I mean, it's interesting to see when the bats go quiet, they go quiet hard, but then there'll be a random game where I don't know.
It's 13-2.
Right. And it's just like, well, why can't you spread those 13 runs around to some of the other games? Don't save them all for one game. That's not helpful. But I thought the adjustment that Council made with putting Yelich in the leadoff, it was effective earlier in the year, but it seems like he's kind of hitting a little bit of a rough patch himself now in that leadoff position. I don't know if another change in the lineup rotation is what's necessary to kind of get the bats going again, but it is a little disheartening to get shut out, especially when you're in Miller Park and you're in front of a home crowd. You shouldn't be getting shut out 4-0 when you've got the leader of the West coming to town and you're starting to trail the St. Louis Cardinals now more and more games. I don't know how the Cardinals did yesterday, but they were a game and a half back going into last night. So at best, they're still a game and a half back. They could be as bad as 2 or 2.5 back now as well.
I wondered, you know, since a lot of this for Brewers fans mentally is going to come back to, you know, trading Josh Hader to the Padres. And I'm not sure quite how he's done. A quick search here shows me he's blown at least one save. And
his first save, he gave up two walks and then a 3-run homer, I believe, was how that loss happened. His first appearance as a Padre.
Hmm. So yeah, there's not much joy in Mudville at this point, but you know, we're doing better than others. We're doing better than, you know, the police department in Newton, Massachusetts, where officials in this Boston suburb are investigating a former city employee who shut down the police department website over a pay dispute. Again, don't anger the nerds because this former employee took down the department website, directed visitors to a message board, you know, saying, oh, the mayor should be able to restore this. The police department has had to create a new website in its place because the IT person got mad over their, you know, pay at the city. So, you know, if you think you're having a rough time, at least you haven't had your entire company website shut down. This is Up North News. We will wrap up this hour coming up next.
Stop surfing the dial. You found the greatest radio station ever. Bull Falls Radio, 98.9 FM and WXCO, 1230 AM.
Tuesday morning in Wisconsin. This is North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow. We're looking at, with the Inflation Reduction Act, and it looks like the bill signing will happen at some point today. Along with the many features in there, we've talked earlier about some of the climate aspects, and we spoke this morning about the algae blooms on Lake Superior and the need to do more, climate change mitigation, especially along our shorelines. But there's also in the Inflation Reduction Act a new measure of tax fairness, not just the 15% minimum tax for large corporations, many of which have paid zero taxes at times, taking advantage of loopholes and giveaways put in by, you know, Ron Johnson and other Republicans. So we restore at least some fairness to the tax code there. But one thing we haven't talked about yet is another first that's going to be in this new law, and that is the finally a tax on stock buybacks. It is something that had long seemed untouchable, that stock buybacks were just a part of life that we were going to have to get used to. And I remember arguing against these 10 years ago when running for office, and it's funny that we were still talking about it until this year. Something finally got done. By the way, by that same measure, Dick Ausman in our last hour talked about the wage cap on Social Security deductions. And a lot of folks don't know that above, once your salary, once you get past $147,000, after that, there are no more deductions from your paycheck for Social Security. And that should have changed again more than a decade ago. That's not changing yet, but at least what is changing is this tax on stock buybacks. It's 1%. It's a 1% excise tax when a company purchases back their own shares. And stock buybacks, are not something, there's something that has just ballooned. Stock buybacks will amount to $1 trillion with a T this year, as companies are basically swollen with cash from profits as the economy has bounced back, after the worst of the pandemic. What's wrong with that is quite elementary and something we were all taught early on about how capitalism works and how it works best. It works best when a company takes its profits and puts it back into the company itself, reinvest it into everything from paying their workers more or hiring more workers or upgrading their machinery, expanding their product line, a whole host of things that also add value to the company rather than simply putting more cash in the pockets of shareholders who then sell their shares back to the company. That does look good on the company's books, but you have added nothing in terms of capacity in terms of the, you know, the quality of, you know, your employees and, you know, what you can do with that money is so much more than the value that you give one time when you're buying back stock. Now, again, not everybody buys into this. Some people believe that, you know, stock buybacks are, you know, provide some kind of value, and that, you know, taxing the buybacks won't change a lot. But I think you have to start someplace. I keep thinking back to, you know, when we were kids, you know, there were like Bugs Bunny cartoons that were made. They made some educational ones as well, you know, including on how, you know, things work in business, explaining supply and demand and things like that. And again, it seems so basic that you would reinvest in your company. But the reason not to is because of something that has become a blight on American capitalism. And that's this concept of a fiduciary responsibility to shareholders, meaning that above all else, we are here to increase shareholder value. We are here to make money more than make widgets, more than being, you know, a good citizen in the community. Those things used to matter a lot more, but, you know, in by and large, starting with the Ronald Reagan era, it was, again, more about the materialism, more about how much cash can we get, not how much can we put back into our company, put back into our community. And by the way, could you slash our corporate taxes along the way? You know, in 2017, you know, the Republican tax law gave companies a huge windfall when the corporate tax rate was slashed from 35% down to 21%. So companies had all kinds of money now that was not going into corporate taxes, which then come back to us for our roads, for our school, for our military, for protecting our resources and what have you. So what did corporations do with that cash? They went crazy with buybacks. And, you know, as a result, workers did not really see the benefits of this, and customers, by and large, did not see it. It was exactly as predicted by Democrats and others that, you know, it did nothing for the rest of anybody who just wasn't a stock owner. And, you know, so we now have a chance in this election to ask people like Ron Johnson to, you know, defend what they did in 2017 with the tax code and what he's done recently in voting against the Inflation Reduction Act and the 1% tax on stock buybacks and the 15% minimum tax on corporations. These are the kinds of things that, you know, they're good for the largest corporations, but they aren't really in keeping with what small businesses need. Small businesses quite frequently aren't focused on tax policy. They actually want to keep good employees. They want to grow their customer base. If they had extra funds, you know, they don't have stock to buy back. They would like to reinvest it. And if not in the company, if not in machinery, if not in inventory, if not in their workers, then in the community directly. Plenty of small businesses, you know, provide everything from, you know, little league sponsorships to charitable donations and putting on events. And these are the things that that really help grow Main Street, that help grow a company's image, far more so than, you know, mega corporations that, especially if they're multinational, you know, if they're able to move on paper, move a lot of their, you know, profits overseas and get treated differently by the tax code. That era of special corporate favors has to come to an end, and it's doing so with the Inflation Reduction Act that's being signed into law today. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is Up North News. We'll have more in our next hour coming up.